Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another fantastically frightening episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. My name is Stefan, and I am your host for the evening, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host with the most. I mean, this man is jellorific. Yes, he is gelling with Magellan, his whole body, Josh Rutledge.
Hi, why, Josh. Why, thank you for that. I don't know. Or do you mean like gelling, like I'm like got some shoals gelling?
No, you jiggle like Jell-O. Is really, it's really what I'm talking about. I mean, okay. you're like Christmas all year round.
Yeah, like a bowl full of jelly.
Yeah. And those of you guys tuning in, you guys can hear that laughter. We have a very, very special guest. We've got another Getting Spooky episode. This week we've got actress Mary Deese Hampton. Her husband is the actor James Hampton. You might know him from F Troop and Teen Wolf, but Mary herself is awesome as well, and she is also a paranormal investigator, and we had to get you on, and we are so thankful. Thank you so much for coming on.
I am so excited to be here. This is so groovy.
Yes, it is totes grooves. And I want to share a little bit of information for our listeners. You have been an actor since 1987, and you got to study with Lou Diamond Phillips before he took off with La Bamba.
Which, I did.
You know, we love us some Lou Diamond Phillips.
Oh, what
you
a
got
great
to
guy.
Be on so many of our favorite shows like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Family Matters, and you were on some of our mom's favorite shows like General Hospital.
You're aging me. You're aging me. But yes, that's all true.
We're just dudes. We don't watch our stories. but your most recent role was as Mrs. Choi on the TNT hit series Claws. Yes. And for those of our fun listeners out there, they might know you as Harold's mom in Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay.
That's right.
The one, when we get to the interview, that I want to talk to you about is your role in Lady Dynamite, because I knew Maria Bamford way back in the day. So it'll be interesting to talk about that. So
yes.
So much fun stuff to talk about. We've got stories from you, stuff about even Jim himself's got some UFO stuff. I'm excited to get talking about it.
Me too.
We are going to invite you to hang around for the whole show. And we're going to start off our show like we always do with our psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
So, this week, our psychic word, of course, comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary from June Bletzer back in 1987. So some of this stuff is fun and dated, and we love it. The word that we came, well, it's a phrase again that we came across, and we did this differently. Usually I flip the pages. Josh gave me two numbers, and I went to a page, and then I went down the second number to that. What we got this week was accidental psychic attack. And what this says, there are two definitions. The first one says, a strong emotional thoughts of fear for another's safety or health forms a thought form that travels to that person thought about. Even though the sender is sincerely concerned about their friend, the thought form of fear and anxiety is picked up by that friend who thinks they are his or her own emotions. Or two, victims of a psychic attack can unconsciously pass this force to another person in the area. So this is an accidental psychic attack, not a psychic attack, but an accidental one. And I think this can be tied in a lot to people that do not shield, or you know, psychic vampires unintentionally. They may not even know that they're a psychic vampire, or all sorts of stuff, just sharing energy and not realizing it. You know, it's one of the reasons we're always told, don't worry, because you tend to put that energy out into the universe and it could affect other people, right?
Mm.
Well, and you know, I think a couple episodes ago, I'm going to try to figure out a way to work Star Trek into every episode. So this to me is a lot like when Spock or whoever would do a mind meld, and there was always that emotional transference that would happen. So it's kind of the same thing. It's that linkage, that it's an unintentional consequence of having that psychic link.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's that. There's an unintentional consequence, but there's also just, it was an accident. You didn't even know that it happened. I mean, like, you could come to my house. I could be so distressed about something that I could, especially if you're an empath, you could accidentally take my sadness from me, right? And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I'm feeling good, right? And so you could look at it as you taking my sadness or me giving it to you because you were open. And if, in that regards, it's an accidental psychic attack. But the first definition talked about just being worried about a friend so much that you send that fear their way.
So makes you wonder about the stuff that's going on right now in the world. If there are enough people who are worried about COVID, mm-hmm. could that worry energy be making it worse?
I absolutely believe that. I'm a big believer in The Secret and positive energy and things like that. And I absolutely believe that negative energy has just as much power as positive energy. And yeah, when you're putting that out there, that you're just worried people are going to die, people are going to die. It may be that way. You know, it's that same thing. Hypochondriacs, they're so worried about being sick that a lot of times they end up getting sick from nothing, because it's all mental, right? I don't know, man. It's
the mind, you know, is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what John Lennon was, you know, talking about, was just imagine a world without all of that worry, without religion, without all that stuff, because that negative connotation is all gone and it's all just positive thinking, right? That's what I'm into this week.
I got a question. Can I ask a question? Am I allowed to ask a question?
You are allowed to do whatever you want. Yes, you're
okay.
Highness.
That's our secret. My question is this, you know, this popped in my head. You know how you'll be thinking about somebody, and maybe it's somebody you haven't thought about in a long time, but you know, you'll see something that reminds you of them or whatever, and then suddenly they call you, or you see them somewhere. You know, to me, I think that's kind of along the same line, not in an attack type of a way, but just in a connection type of a way.
Right. I would call that then accidental psychic communication. And when we were in college, my close friends and I, that have always been new agey and pagan and things of that regard, we used to call it witch mail. That, you know, because this is when email was just starting to come around and things like that. And we'd be on college campus, and one of us would just be like, oh, David needs us, because we could just feel it, like, you know, and then we'd run across campus and go to them. They're like, good, you got my witch mail. Or
see?
You can do it with parents, like we used to do it, because we couldn't afford long distance. And if I didn't have a phone card, I would just try to like send the vibe out to my mom, like, call me. And like, I swear, like 60-70% of the time she would call me within an hour. It was
mother's intuition, though, too.
Yep, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, so. I would just call. You know, I do a collect call, and then just say, "Hey, this is Josh. I'm doing okay. You can accept the charges if you want."
Yeah. See, with my stepdad hated me, so he didn't want me to call. So mom had to call on the DL.
Oh.
So she's divorced him, so I don't care now. But. You know, yeah. So I had to have to call on the down low. So she would usually call me. So a lot of times she'd know. I'd call and it would ring like three times, and I'd hang up, and she'd know.
She would know
me.
It was you.
Yeah. So, but well, yeah. So that's
card.
Our
phone card was a blast from the past.
Oh yeah, and then some 10-10-3-2-1. Not a sponsor. So, But yeah, so let's go ahead and move on. This is was our psychic word of the week, but we want to go ahead and jump right into this week's spooky news. All right, so I had a couple things that I wanted to pull from this week for spooky news, but this one stuck out to me the most because of the quarantine that we're all in right now. Even though states are opening back up, people are still choosing to be in lockdown. You know, I am for the most part. And, you know, here's what this is. This comes from the New York Post, and I actually found it on a number of different sites, but the headline reads, "People stuck in haunted homes during quarantine report a rise in spooky happenings." And what this says is that the coronavirus is spooky enough. True, true. But try living through the lockdown in a house that's haunted. The unlucky residents of homes believed to have ghosts and ghouls rattling around say they know that they have no way to keep themselves socially distant from the spirit world and have been subjected to an extra dose of paranormal activity during the coronavirus quarantine lockdown. Believers say they're experiencing everything from books flying off the shelves to creepy cold brushes of air and pets behaving strangely. "The more I'm stuck in this house, the more there's a feeling," said Kurt Schleicher, 56, of Tampa, Florida, who has been forced to stay at home during the coronavirus in the notorious house where killer Victor Licata slaughtered his parents, three siblings, and family pooch in 1933. He says, "You notice all these weird supernatural things when you normally wouldn't, and there's so much time to think about how extra scary they are." He has told the Post that he's trying to share the home peacefully with its spectral occupants amid the lockdown. He says, "I guess you could say I'm getting to know my roommates. They left this earth in a stressful way. They were murdered while they slept, and their time was cut short. So I understand where they're coming from." Schleicher, who bought the house because he was a non-believer when he bought it, now says he may have been dead wrong that ghosts don't exist. He even says that his boxer, a dog, has been sitting in the bedroom where the mother was murdered and barks at the wall for no reason. And he says this is not in his nature. And in the bathroom, he can feel a coldness come over him, a cold brush of something walking by. And it goes on and on, talks about a few others, but I think we get the gist here that, yeah, something I don't think most of us thought about is that those that live in a pretty haunted house are stuck with them more than usual.
Well, and you think about it, I've moved into some houses before that were haunted, and there's usually like a stirrup of activity when you first move in.
Right.
And then you get into your routine and they get into theirs, and then everything kind of settles down. Well, all of this stuff, everybody's routines are broken. So, yeah. I mean, there's going to be some reactions of,
some
hey,
disturbance,
I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, exactly.
You know, and yeah, just like you said, this disturbance, it's kind of shaking things up that, you know, they don't have their routines. You don't have your routines. Plus, you're there more. So they're able to kind of build more energy. You know, because I definitely think that not only do ghosts take from electrical energy and things in the house, but remember, we have electricity running through us as well. And so I believe that they can take some of that from us, almost like an incubus or a succubus without the sexual flavor. But, you know, as a way to kind of feed a little bit to allow themselves more activity.
Well, and again, talking about our energy that we, you know, put out there in the world, if we're also irritated because we're at home with our families we may not see all the time usually, then all the energy gets released out into the home.
Oh, well, I didn't even think about that. Negative energy feeding something too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't even think about that. Yeah. That could definitely feed something like poltergeist or something dark, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Well, do you think too that maybe it's just, you know, when we're, you know, we're not at home, this activity is occurring anyway. We're just not there to experience it. But now that we're here, it's, you know, it's pronounced because we're here. And,
yeah,
and
sure.
You know, I mean, there's this misconception, I think, at least in my experience with, you know, paranormal investigation that, you know, well, this only happens at night. Well, why would hauntings only happen at night? You know, I mean, and I think that the idea is that we've got so much activity during the day that's distracting us, different sounds, et cetera, that, oh, now it's nighttime and the house is quiet. Now I'm hearing all this stuff. but it's been going on all day. We're just distracted. You know, we're just not hearing it. And now that we're home, you know, during the day, suddenly I heard that, or I experienced this. I mean, I think maybe some of that is true as well. It's, you know, it's there. It's just been, you know, fogged up by other stuff that we were otherwise doing, or we just weren't home to experience in the day.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely agree with that. I mean, yeah, and just like you said, things happen during the day. I mean, we talk about my place of employment while I was there. It's an old building. I would get tapped on the shoulder all the time. This is all stuff that happened during the day. I mean, heck, there's been one or two times Josh and I were recording, his door just opened up, you know, like just, no cat, no nothing, just random stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah, they're there. They pay to play. So they're there. And if you give them an audience all day long, I mean, I'll tell you, if I was haunting somebody, I'd be stoked if I had somebody all day long. Especially if they're lonely, you know, at the same time, especially if they're lonely. So, but yeah, so that's our spooky news for the week. You know, if any of you are out there listening and you've noticed your haunting activity skyrocket a little bit since the lockdown, let us know about that. We'd be curious to see if anybody else has had these experiences besides old Mr. Schlesher over here from Florida. But yeah, so on that, Josh, let's go ahead and move right into our UFO sighting of the week. All right, Josh, what do we got this week for our UFO sighting of the week?
Yeah, so this happened on Saturday, May 9th of this year.
Oh, so recently, yeah.
Yep, in Radcliffe, Kentucky.
Oh, so near us, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh.
So it says,
at first I thought they were candle lanterns someone was letting off, but then three more came behind the first in a triangle pattern. They weren't going very fast, like they were just looking and watching. Again, there was no sound. I have no knowledge in editing, but I have a video.
So I don't have the video to play for you all, but I will see if I can download it so that we can put it up.
Yeah, put it on. Make sure we post that for sure. As soon as this gets posted, we should post that video as well. I'd like to see it.
So, and then I know, Mary, you have a UFO story, or maybe it's Jim's story, but one that you can share on Jim's behalf.
Yes, I do. He is a firm believer. Now he was caretaker in the original Longest Yard movie back in the mid-70s, and right after that movie, he did another movie with Burt that they shot in Nashville called WW and the Dixie Dance Kings. And if you watch that movie and you watch that character that Burt plays, he is absolutely essence of the Bandit, which came just a couple years later. But he and Bert were in Nashville shooting WW, and they had the studio had rented them a house kind of out on the outskirts of Nashville. And so he was driving back there late one night, and he said he looked up and there were all these like different colored orbs, lights in the sky. And he had read, oh gosh, you know, maybe a year or so earlier, that Jimmy Carter, who would be president in 77, that he had actually experienced a UFO, I think in the late 60s in Georgia, and that he actually filed a report, and I can't remember the name of the organization, but like the national, you know, organization for UFO, you know
what it was then. Yeah,
definitely. and he actually filed a report, and he said, I will never again ridicule anyone who says they've seen an UFO. And he was a firm believer, and Jimmy actually wrote him a letter and said, you know, I too have experienced this. And interestingly enough, he got invited to Carter's inauguration. I don't know if it was because of the UFO letter or what, but yeah, so we've had a president here who is a firm believer, and he's still with us.
Looks like it was NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. 1973, he filed it and said that he saw it in October of 1969. And I've seen some interviews where he's talked about it, and he was very open about it. And there is some talk now. Now, bear with me. This is conspiracy as it all get out. Is why he didn't win the second term was because he was trying to dig deep into UFO files, and the shadow government didn't want him. That's just
I mean, I believe that. But you know, I love that story because you know, I mean, it certainly lends some credibility for, you know, so many persons out there who, like myself, you know, believe, you know, and so there you go. So that's Jimmy's story about his UFO.
Especially about as devout a Christian as Carter was, too. That's a big deal because a lot of Christians are very anti-UFO.
You know what? I'm a Christian, and I say, you know, why did God decide to stop with us, you know?
Exactly.
Exactly. I love shows like this. I love the History Channel, et cetera, et cetera. but you know, there's shows that I have seen countless times where they have pointed out in like Renaissance paintings, you know, that looks like a flying saucer back there. Archaeological statues that they found, they're very, very ancient, you know, things that look like a space suit, you know, and these carvings. And
It's crazy.
I'm all over it.
I know all those you're talking about. And that Renaissance painting, there's one, it's like all these like bishops and they're all looking out and there's just all these discs in the sky. It's insane. And some people even suggest that the halo effect that we saw in a lot of those paintings on saints and stuff were supposed to represent the ship they came from. Throwing that one out there too. I dig into some weird stuff, man.
I'm with you.
You just never know. And I don't know. The universe is too big for me to say no. It's just,
there you go. Me too. I believe it.
Why would God create like 50 million galaxies, not just a solar system, but galaxies if there's nothing else there and we don't get to see it with our own plain eyes, right? So
he made a platypus. That's all I'm saying.
And he made Josh. So
yeah, that's right. In my gelatin. So
in your gelatin body. Exactly. All right. Well, that is our UFO story. Thank you for sharing Jim's story there, and as well as letting us talk about Jimmy Carter's as well. So we're going to move right into our final segment, which is Creepy Ketchup.
Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
Of course, this is the segment where people know that we kind of check in with each other to see if we've had any paranormal experiences ourselves throughout the week. Anything creepy, weird, happenstancy happening. And that's kind of what Creepy Ketchup is. And Mary, if you've got one too, you're welcome to share. I will tell you, it was a pretty slow week for me. And I've been doing a lot of paranormal reading and watching this week too. And I really thought there'd be something. I did do the lucid dreaming test that you, Josh, and I and Santosh talked about. So I did the color thing, and I did indeed dream of being in a forest and all kinds of things like that. So that worked, not the part where I realized I was dreaming, but I did dream of a ton of green.
Right.
But that's about all I got this week, you know?
So yeah, mine is the last several weeks have been really bad for me at work. Just not like bad, negative, just really busy.
Heavy
work. And so most nights I'm just exhausted by the time I go to bed. So I don't really have, you know, any reason to try to do anything. So last night I was laying in bed, and I actually went to bed at a reasonable time. And so I decided to do the number test with, you know, we've done before, where I will think of a number and I'll kind of put it out there to you, and we'll see if, you know, you're able to guess the number.
I'm always like one digit off.
I know.
Ever noticed that? Every time I'm one digit off.
Yeah. So this time it was 36 and you guessed 37.
Yep.
So,
every time it's one digit. Well,
and the first time it was like my number was 42 and you said 24. So it was
it was reversed. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I thought about that number and I kind of put it out there. Well, as soon as I kind of opened my mind to put it out there, I had this rush of like all these, I don't know, this is going to sound really weird, but all these alien faces just started like popping up in my head. Just, mm-hmm. you know, a bunch of different kinds, a bunch of different shapes, sizes, all this kind of stuff. And I went to sleep and I had a dream that like, I don't remember a lot of the dream, but I remember it like you and I were there. Stantosh was there. Keith Age was there. And we were doing some kind of an investigation somewhere. It was like in the daytime, though. We were wearing like heavy coats. It was in the wintertime. It was just really weird. And we found this artifact. And then I woke up.
Well, don't forget you dreamed of the Kentucky Goblins kind of too, which was really, really interesting because the night you dreamed about the Hopkinsville Kentucky Goblins incident, I had read a ton that night right before I went to bed on it, like because I was reading in John Keel's book, The Eighth Tower. He was talking about it, and then he referenced that Hynek talked a lot about it in his first book. So I also had that book, so I went and found that, and it was a lot of information on that. And so I just like poured myself into the Kentucky Goblins incident and fell asleep. And then the next morning, you're like, oh, I had a dream that we were investigating the Kentucky Goblins. So we are definitely connected, my friend. That was an accidental psychic communication.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
You go.
Not an attack. Yeah. Just a communication.
Way to tie it all back in together.
Yeah. Or if you're an improv, it's group mind. That's what we have. So
that's pretty much all I've had. No sightings or anything. Nothing kind of moving or anything like that in the house. But I am hopeful for this weekend.
Yeah, every time we get together, something happens. So I'm interested. We're meeting up this weekend. So for a little social distancing. But yeah, Mary, do you have anything happen to you weird this week? Or is it just kind of a calm one too?
You know, I don't know if any of you experienced this, but I don't know if it's paranormal or if it's some kind of, I don't think I live in a haunted environment. I think that there's visitation here by good things. But have you ever like woken up to a noise, like someone knocking on the door or a door closing, and you wake up and you go check it out and you don't, you know, there's nothing, you know, like I'd hear something sometimes, and one time Jim's golf clubs in the attic had fallen over, but it's nothing like that. And you think that was so real, and I heard it, and I wasn't dreaming about someone knocking on the door. I wasn't dreaming about someone slamming a door. I mean, I've had two of those things happen this week, but they weren't frightening things, you know. We have a very good friend named April Slaughter, and April has written several books. She's an artist. She's a paranormal investigator, and you mentioned Keith Age, who I love and adore. I know that I think she has attended maybe Mid-South Paranormal or some events that he has been a part of. But Jim and I were, when she was located here in the Dallas area, we were a part of her paranormal source in investigation group, and she has stayed with us. She has moved to Utah, but she has come back into town several times and stayed with us here at the house. And she said, I just want to assure you that there's nothing bad here. And so that made me feel so much better. You know, I mean, there's something here, but it's nothing bad. And, you know, I lost my mom 2 years ago, and she was here with us for the last year or so of her life, and I know that my mom is here, and so I'm comforted by that. But yeah, have you ever done that? Have you ever woken up and it to a sound, and it's not a sound that has any logical explanation for that sound, but clearly it was knocking or clearly it was a door shutting?
Yeah, quite frequently. Yeah, I think we both have. Yeah,
and actually, well, talking about that, two nights ago, I woke up to my dog's tags rattling, my dog passed last year. So,
Interesting. That would give me the goosebumps in a good way.
Yeah,
and one of the things I tell Josh and tell our folks, listeners on the show as well, is that I hear my name called all the time, and no one's around.
Is it a male voice or a female voice or
both? It's different all the time. Now, when I'm in public, I can write it off because it's Stefan. I'm like, oh, maybe somebody said seven. You know, like I can write it off. But like when I'm by myself and there's no TV on, or like, you know, like it's something. And I'll be like, what? Hello, is somebody here? And it's nobody. My whole life since I was a kid, that's been, and I have a weird name. Stefan is not a common name, so it's not like, you know, you would hear that a lot. So very interesting.
You know, talking about being woken up to things. So my daughters will get up one at a time, usually in the middle of the night, and they don't like, they don't touch us to wake us up. They just stand
right next to the bed.
They just like stand next to the bed.
It's like the twins from The Shining.
Yes. Yes. And so, like, you're in a deep sleep, and you just know something's wrong. So you just wake up and kind of peek out from the covers, and there's just like this silhouette of this girl standing there at the edge of your bed. For a moment, you freak out, and you're like, "Okay, what do you need?" So,
man, you totally need to dress your girls up as the girls from The Shining for Halloween. I didn't even think about that. That would be awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead. That's our creepy catch up. Thank you for sharing one. And let's move into our interview as soon as we do a quick sponsor break.
Hey, everyone. Josh here. Do you feel like mainstream options for things such as yoga, meditation, or documentaries and films meant to expand your mind are lacking? Have you heard of Gaia? Gaia is the largest resource of consciousness-expanding videos. Both Stefan and I have watched several of the series, documentaries, and films available on topics such as the Secret Space Program, channeling interdimensional beings, and alien encounters. We're just now exploring the over 8,000 films, shows, and classes available to stream on your favorite devices. To get your 10-day free trial of Gaia, go to fearscapepodcast.com/Gaia offer. Again, that's fearscapepodcast.com/GAIA offer.
All right, we are back, and we have an interview, of course, with Mary Dees Hampton. Again, thank you so much for joining us. We want to get spooky with you. And
all right, now I want to get spooky back.
You've got a good history of paranormal stuff, and like I said, you know Keith H., so that's already spooky enough, and so we're very, very excited to have you on, and I'm going to hand over the reins a little bit to Josh and let him kind of run the show a little bit, but I'll pop in whenever I feel like it.
Please do.
Yep. So Mary, one of the things that we like to kind of start off with all of our guests is, I guess, kind of the earliest memory that you have of you know, a paranormal type experience. You know, what, you know, were you little, were you in your teens, were you, you know, was it later in life that you started having your first experiences? Or,
well, okay, so let me go back to the very, 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 very beginning of my life. I was a twin, and my twin died at 33 hours. And it was a girl, and I have always felt her with me. I have always felt that even when I'm alone, I'm not, you know, and if I'm sad or distressed in any way, I just feel her. And I always have.
I was going to ask that. That's, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
So that says to me that, like, the spirit is ageless.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So the spirit doesn't matter if you're a baby or an adult. The spirit is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And so I've always had that. But I'll tell you, the first time that I remember having any kind of paranormal or you know, strange, what do they call it? Oh, gosh, I'm at a loss for words. Like, not precognition, but we get a feeling. It was about a place. I used to go up. I was raised in Texas.
Let me check my psychic dictionary over
yes,
here.
Please. yes, please do. But I was raised in Texas, but my grandmother had a sister in New Jersey. And so every summer I would pack up with my grandmother and spend the summers in New Jersey. And she had a daughter there who married a widower with five children, and they had two more. So they were always living in some big, rambling, old Victorian house that, you know, had secret doors and, you know, stuff like that. And I just loved it because I was an only child. And so, you know, it was always exciting to me to, you know, to be up there. And I never got freaked out or anything like that by any of these homes except for one. And I was probably, 12 or 13 years old. And they had moved into this house in Barrington, New Jersey. And it was a big, sprawling house. They all had those creepy basements and like that. Mm-hmm. But there were three teenage girls, and they shared my cousin's husband had built out the attic of this house. So now it's basically four stories. You've got the basement, and then the attic is built out. The whole attic was their bedroom. And I always wanted to hang out with the cool girls, even though I wasn't like 15 or 16. I wanted to be up there with them. I had another cousin, their younger sister, who was always in trouble. She was always the girl that snuck out of the house, and, you know, and I was Miss Goody Two Shoes. I did not, you know, did not subscribe to that, so I was going to hang out with these other girls. But the only way you could get up to that attic was through the closet of one of the bedrooms on the second floor. There weren't separate stairs or a pull down or anything like that. You had to go, and that was really creepy. But I was always uncomfortable in that house. And I went there one summer, and I spent the night up there in the attic, and it just, I didn't like it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's just the stairs going that weird way up there, and that's the only way out, and that bugged me. But that was that summer they had moved into that house, I want to say the fall before. And that spring, the cousin who was always sneaking out had snuck out, and when she was sneaking back in, the basement was on fire, and that place went up like a tinderbox.
Oh my God, everybody
got out. But had it not have been for that cousin sneaking out and being bad, they probably would have all died in that fire. And especially the girls up there in the attic room.
In the attic.
And it just, the whole thing burned to the ground. Just burned to the ground. They lost everything. It was very sad. But I don't know. I mean, what do you call that? But that made me become more aware and accepting of those kinds of, you know, intuitions that I had about people or that I had about
premonitions.
Places.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of when it started. And, you know, I'm a believer. And so I think that we're constantly surrounded. And when you got good energy, you invite good things. And when you're putting off negativity and everything, it's negative things. But I want to share something real quick, because I know some of your listeners may have grandparents or parents who may have some kind of dementia related disease, or, you know, Alzheimer's or something like that. And I had mentioned April Slaughter, and she had spent some time interviewing persons who were in the last months or days of their lives, and she said something to me once, and I think this is something that stuck with me. I've got an aunt who has dementia now, and she said, you know, a lot of persons, when they are in the last days or hours of their lives, they're talking to someone who's not there. Maybe it's a sister who passed, or their grandmother, and et cetera, and or they're reaching out, and she said, you know, don't ever say, oh, you know, Mama, there's nobody there. Oh, Grandma, there's nobody there. There's nobody there. She said, she believes, and I do too. And she put it this way: the thinner the veil, the closer to God, the thinner the veil. Mm-hmm. So they see things we don't because they're getting closer to God. And
yeah,
so we should never.
When she passed, I wasn't there, but my mom and sister were there, and they said that before she passed, she said, Uncle Pete's here, and Grandma Clara. Those were mm-hmm. her two favorite relatives that she missed more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she looked over at my mom, and she said, Uncle Pete wanted to say you grew up so beautiful, you know.
Oh.
And, like, you know, and my mom and sister are both big believers. My sister can speak to the dead and things like that. So, yeah, I get that.
So I think we should be sensitive to that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's easy to say, Grandma, there's nothing there. You know, just calm down. No. I think that we should be sensitive to that because I believe that. I think that God sends comforters to make that transition easier for us. And so I don't know. I don't know why that popped in my head, but it did. So.
No,
there.
I'm with
now
you.
We're all crying and you know,
yeah,
but
I know. Well, even on the other side,
I'm not
play,
Debbie Downer, I promise. I just
let's play devil's advocate.
That.
Let's play devil's advocate and say it's not real, right? Who cares? Let them have a happy moment. It's
right,
their last
exactly.
moment, you know, like just, you know, it's not going to hurt.
How's that? Yeah. Exactly. How's that hurting you?
Right. Yeah. I don't understand why people do that. Yeah. It's an odd thing that people
mm-hmm.
hang on to their, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but they hang on to their own things while someone else is passing, you know,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
that's not yours. Let them
right.
have this moment. This is it
mm-hmm.
for them. So.
So there are some of the experiences I have. I can I share one of Jim's?
We'd love to have some Jim stories.
So, Jim's so funny. Okay, so I've got to tell you this story because it's really funny. And he's got, his autobiography is coming out this fall. It's called What? And Give Up Show Business. And it's just basically a recounting of some funny stories. And in his biography leading up to the stories about him being in Hollywood and et cetera, he tells a story about when he was in college. I said, you know, I asked him one time, I said, do you have any good ghost stories? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, I was like, oh, so, you know, I'm waiting with bated breath. And he's telling me the story. And he said, well, he was out with a pal of his and they were in college. They were driving around and the guy had a convertible and they had, you know, put on a little toot and he thought it would be very funny to throw empty beer cans at the police station as they drove by in Denton, Texas. And he proceeded to do just that. And then suddenly, they get pulled over and his friend Bob, you know, he's a nice guy and less inebriated than Jim. You know, he was trying to confess to doing it. But as Jim said, Bob had a kind face and I did not. So they immediately were on to my shenanigans. And they took him to the justice of the peace and he said, kid, how much money do you have? And he said, I got $1.40. And he said, okay, well, that's your fine, but you got to do 20 hours of community service. And he said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, you got to mow the cemetery. And so now this cemetery is still there in Denton, Texas, out by University of North Texas, what it is now, University of North Texas. So Jim said, oh, you know, yes, sir, yes, sir. And he thought he got off pretty light. And he said that first night he got over there and they had those push mowers, you know, those old push mowers.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like 1957 or something. And he said he was out. He thought, you know, I'm pretty embarrassed. I don't want my friends to see me. I'll just go out like at midnight or something and mow the cemetery. So he got his push mower and he's out there and he's been mowing for like, you know, half an hour. And all of a sudden, here comes the police car and these two cops get out of the car and they shine the light on him. And one cop goes, Hampton, is that you? He said, yes, sir. He said, what are you doing out there? He said, well, I'm doing my community service. And there was this pause and then there was this laughter and he said, get out of here, kid. And what he found out later was that a woman who lived across the street from the cemetery had called the police station and said, there's a ghost in the cemetery and you'll never believe what it's doing. So he said his ghost story was that he got mistaken for a ghost.
Go for a ghost.
That is so funny. Oh, that's brilliant. He is absolutely one of my favorite comedic actors, man.
Aww.
Josh and I were talking about it. He was definitely the dad we always wanted because of those Teen Wolf movies and the cartoon. I'm telling you that right now, and you can tell him that.
You know, let me tell you something. The he had to audition for the role of the dad in the cartoon. He said his agent called him up and said, "Hey, I've got great news." And he said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "They're making a Teen Wolf Saturday morning cartoon." And he said, "Great, you know, I've got the role of the dad." And he said, "Yeah, you got to audition." And Jim said, "Audition? I was the dad in both the movies." And they said, "Well, you know how it goes." And as it turns out, he was the only original actor from the movies to voice the cartoon.
It's just, it's so funny that he's not the first person that's happened to. Like, I've seen interviews with other actors that had, like, animated stuff, and they were like, I had to audition for this. Like, they didn't just say, "Hey, come on."
Yeah. Well, what about the new Scooby-Doo cartoon? Yes. Matthew Lillard was, I mean, you know, I don't think he's a part of that. And Casey Kasem was the first Shaggy. And I think, wasn't Matthew Lillard in the kind of
in the movies.
The live
action. Yeah.
And then he's done some of the animated stuff Matthew Lillard had, but even him, they made him audition for that. And I'm like, he picked up Casey Kasem's briefcase and went to town, man.
Right.
I know.
I'm like, wow.
It's like telling Charlton Heston he has to audition for the role of Moses in the cartoon version of the Ten Commandments or something.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd be surprised, man, how casting agents are. Or directors are like, "Oh, I don't want to deal with some big-time actor. Can we just get a voiceover person?"
Yeah.
Oh, geez. That's
so
great.
So you're just kind of taking us back a little bit. So your first experience then was just kind of your idea or your intuition, if you will, for the house, which turned out to be foretelling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then was there any so I know that you had mentioned before that you used to be a part of an investigation team.
Yes. And Jimmy too. Jimmy, who loved me so much, he will do anything I ask him to do except look for Bigfoot, because he says there's ticks in the woods. There's ticks.
but, that's understandable.
I'll look for Bigfoot in the wintertime. That's
There you go. But we did. We joined. It's something, you know. I mean, it's just, you know, it's something I've always wanted to do. And I said, come do it with me. Okay. So we joined a group, and we actually investigated three locations. We investigated a home in Gainesville, Texas. We went down, and I've seen this place before on a number of different shows, like Ghost Adventures and that. The Black Swan Inn down near San Antonio. And then we investigated an old, in downtown the Fort Worth Stockyards. There's everything down there is like super old, but there's a kind of an ice cream parlor place. They serve other food, but down in their basement, that place, you know, goes back to, you know, like 1865 or something, and they, you know, it had been everything from a brothel to a saloon to you know, a speakeasy, and so we did some investigations, and I have to say that it was pretty surprising, because you had, you know, you can't, I guess sometimes you can guess, you know, maybe what kind of person, like an occupation or something that might be, you know, haunting a location. But the place in the home that we investigated in Gainesville, it ended up being a Pony Express rider. And it was a stop, I guess, for the Pony Express. And interestingly enough, the other thing that I found is sometimes spirits will respond to one person. Like if you're holding the EMF meter or something, and then Joe over there holds it. Well, they don't want to talk to Joe, but every time you hold it, they're on it,
right.
You know? And I thought that was interesting because, you know, why me? Why, you know, and that's what happened to me there. Now, it didn't happen to me anywhere else, but it was like, I'm holding this and I'm getting all the responses. And so I hand it over to somebody else for them to ask questions. Nothing, nada. Give it back to me. And now we're getting some answers. So that was really interesting because I hadn't thought about, you think, you know, like they decide, oh, I want to talk to this person, you know, for whatever reason. And, mm-hmm. and, so yeah, so we did some investigations and, the place down in the stockyards, there was kind of nothing. Although Jim found something real interesting, back in the corner, there was this peeling old, horrible remnant of a poster, and he got really excited because I guess when this place was a speakeasy back in the 50s or 60s, there was this famous stripper named Candy Barr, and this poster was
name.
It was you know, advertising Candy Barr, you know, next Saturday night. So anyway, so that was his big
nougat.
Yeah, that was his big takeaway from that investigation. But so, you know, sometimes you go and, you know, spirits are not trained seals. You know, you can't go, okay, right. Hit it. You know, you're going to go sometimes and get some response, and you're going to go sometimes and you get nothing. And, you know, so I'm not saying that the woman didn't experience anything. I'm just saying we didn't the right. night we were there. So,
well, and that's, you know, that's the diligence, I guess, of a lot of these investigation teams to go out night after night and, you know, have maybe a dry spell, but still keep going out and doing mm-hmm. it. Right? I mean, that's dedication. So
yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Mm hmm.
So I know that you had mentioned, I lost my train of thought for a second. It derailed.
I'm sorry. I mentioned Candy Barr, and it just took off the other way.
I was thinking about chocolatey nougat.
Yeah, well.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So so you know, you had your stories for when you were doing the investigation stuff. Did Jim ever have anything specific happen when he was doing investigations?
Well, I don't, you know, no, I mean, not that I did not witness myself, but he did have a paranormal experience that had to do with his younger brother. His younger brother, Dan, passed when he was 36, and he died of pneumonia, but prior to that, he had a burst esophagus, and so he was recovering from that surgery and event, and he got pneumonia and passed. And Jim said he knew that his brother was, you know, his mother was taking care of nursing him back to health there and at her home, and that he was, you know, not doing well. But Jim said he was worried about him, just worried about him. And he was away doing a film, and he woke up in the middle of the night just with this feeling of euphoria, just this feeling. And he said, just at total peace, he had been worried and worried and worried about Dan. And he said he just had this, not just peace, but just this happiness come over him. Mm. And he said within minutes, the phone rang. And it was his mother saying that Dan had passed.
Wow.
And April was staying with us. This was about 4 or 5 years ago. And Jim was taking a nap, and she was in the living room. And she said he came around the corner of the hall, and he lost his balance. And she said she looked up, and she saw a man standing next to him. And she said Jim turned around and looked at him too, looked right at him. And then she got up and helped Jim back in the living room. And I said to her later, I said, well, what did this man look like? And she said, well, he presented himself as a cowboy. He had on jeans and a cowboy hat. And I went and got a photo of Jim's younger brother, Dan. And I showed it to her. And I said, could this be the person you saw? And she said, it very well could be. Jim's brother, Dan, was a rodeo clown.
And so I believe
that Dan is here, and visits Jim. So, you know, that is a paranormal experience on his part that I know of. So I love that. I love that it's Dan. I love that.
I know that my my grandfather, who passed about 12, 13 years ago, I mean, he visits. I smell his cigarette smoke sometimes. My wife tells me it's because I'm having a stroke, but I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, no, same. My grandmother, like, I smell her perfume, and I know she's there. Like, it's a telltale sign. My wife doesn't wear that perfume. I mean, it's like, right. I don't even know what it is. Like, but I know that smell. Smells are really big.
Right, it is.
Paranormal, yeah.
You know, I've still got a little coat of my mother's. I have a lot of things of my mother's, but I have a coat hanging on a hook where she had it. And I still walk over to that coat and I just smell it. I want to smell her. And it's very faint, but it's there. I can still smell it.
Yeah.
My brother, my dad's a big pool player, and I used to work for the Pro Billiards Tour and all kinds of stuff. And he's had various pool sticks throughout his life, but the one he had through most of our childhood, somehow my brother got a hold of it, my older brother. And he's the big, like, family artifact collector. And so, you know, my dad's still around, but he had gotten that. And I was out there one year, out at Tommy's house, and he says, hey, I want you to smell something. Tell me what you smell. And he hands me the pool stick, and it was my dad. It's like you could smell. It's like all those years of being in a smoky bar. You could smell the oils that make up my dad's personal scent, or any cologne that he's always worn, like Aramis, his whole life. And it's like you could smell. I mean, it was all just this collective smell that made up my dad. And I was like, God, when he passes, this is going to be hard. It's like, because we're all going to have his things, and you're going to smell that. I hate to say musk because that makes it sound gross, but it's like that musk that is my dad's scent. Yeah.
As long as you don't say moist.
Yeah, no. That musky moist.
No. The moist is bad. Well, I'll tell you
but
a funny
especially
story.
Especially those old ones, you know, where, you know, because people don't really smoke as much anymore, but those
Correct.
Old ones kind of fit that. So.
Right. I'll tell you a funny story about Dan. So Dan was a rodeo clown, and he decided he was going to marry this pretty girl named Dixie. Only Dixie's daddy did not take well to the idea that his son-in-law would be a rodeo clown. And so he decided that he ought to have a more sophisticated kind of job. And since he was a general manager of the store in downtown Fort Smith, Arkansas, he gave him a job at the department store there. And Jim said Dan had been there about 2 weeks. And he was unhappy. You know, he wanted to be outside. And he said he was stocking shoes or something, and he was carrying him into the elevator, and I guess the elevator had not quite come up to the floor level, and he fell into the elevator and broke his leg. And Jim said he went up there and visited him in the hospital, and he said, man, he said 15 years of rodeo clowning and nothing ever happened. I work in a department store for 2 weeks and I break my leg.
That's
so
exactly
he went back to
say.
he went back to rodeo clown, and they got a divorce. Anyway,
that's fantastic. Oh, that's fantastic. I love that. So I have a question for you, because I like finding out, you know, because I have had my share of paranormal experiences since I was a child, good and bad. Not all of them have been great. Have you ever had any experiences that have been kind of on the negative side?
You know, I've had, like I said, I mean, I don't guess I've had so many what I would consider one-on-one encounters as I have had bad feelings. I've had bad feelings about people that I meet, you know, that, I'm not sure I want to get in a car with them, or, you know, I don't think I want to do business with that person. Or
yep,
and there's
and I
nothing
always say trust that.
Yeah, there's nothing about that person outwardly that would make me be fearful of those things. But it's that, I guess it's just that kind of intuition. But as far as, I guess I just haven't had anything negative happen to me personally with any kind of a paranormal experience where, you know, something attacked me or frightened me in that regard. But again, it's just feelings of being in places that make me uncomfortable. And people that make me uncomfortable. And I want to believe that it is, you know, that those are, you know, my guides, right. You know, my loved ones who are guiding me to steer away from places and people sometimes. But yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, a few weeks ago we had Vashti Hooper on the Real Medium, and you know, she one thing that she said when she was on is that our loved ones, our family members visit us all the time to help guide us in the decisions that we make.
Mm-hmm.
And that really resonated with me, because it's not just, they're not just here when you think you need them, you know, they're here all the time to help you make sure you're making the right choices and the right
decisions.
Right. Yeah. That even possibly sometimes that conscious voice that you hear may be one of your relatives or friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking a minute ago about hearing a sound. Now I have heard a voice before that woke me up, you know, and sometimes it's my name being said, but yeah. You know, it's not just a sound. Sometimes it's a voice, and the voice may not be saying my name, but it just may be like, oh, or
yeah.
Yes, or something. And yeah. that word wakes me up. So, you know, why not? Why can't I certainly believe that our loved ones just don't stop loving us and fly away. You know, I think that they love us for eternity.
And I think once they cross that veil, cross that portal, they have a different type of access that we can't even imagine,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
that they are able to traverse back and forth through that light, through that portal, you know, and that's one thing. Anytime I've been on an investigation, we definitely head towards the psychic side of things and helping spirits and things like that. And when my sister and I, especially when we try to help move a spirit along, we can remind them, hey, once you cross, you'll always be able to come back and see anyone that you've loved or a place that you've loved, you know, and you're not stuck here and you won't be stuck there. Like it's,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's kind of beautiful. And it's kind of, I don't know. Makes me feel good about passing on myself.
Well, and I like, you know, like the movie Interstellar with Matthew McConaughey. You know, when his daughter, when she's young and she gets the, if anybody hasn't seen it, I apologize. I don't think I'm gonna ruin anything here. But
no.
but his daughter gets the lines on the floor, and then that gets him to thinking about what those lines mean. And then you go on in the movie and you figure out that he's the one that actually made the lines. And so it gets into the whole, you know, paradox and all that kind of stuff. But it makes me think about, you know, if the spirit is timeless and ageless, then if you had an experience as a child, it may have been with a spirit who you didn't know had passed yet. So the spirit passed in later in your life, because the spirit is timeless, it could have interacted with you as a child.
You know, that's interesting. There's a movie that I've watched recently by the film company A24. They're like my favorite new independent horror film type stuff, but they do more than, it's artsy stuff, but they did a movie called A Ghost Story. I actually didn't really care for the movie all that much, but there was an interesting concept where throughout the movie, this character is being haunted by this ghost, and then he ends up passing away and he becomes a ghost and haunts his family that was left over. Well, he's there because this shows that he's stuck to a place, and so years go by and new people move in, so he haunts them, and then the house gets the house gets torn down and that's like this futuristic building, and he's all of a sudden able to go up into the building and up to the top. Well, somehow they didn't really explain it, but he like dives off the top of the building, and then he ends up back in like the 1700s to like the settlers that went there. So he was ended up haunting them, but of course he was stuck to that spot. And then he sees himself and his family moving in, and it turns out that he was his own ghost. It was mind blowing, man. Like
that is strange.
So it was weird. It's weird to think like that, man, the ghost you're hearing could be you.
Is you. So don't be mean to it.
Yeah, right. It could be you, man.
You could be telling you, don't get on that bus.
Yeah, exactly. And it's you going, I did this before. Change.
You know, okay, let me ask you a question. I know you're supposed to be interviewing me, but I'm going to interview you back.
That's okay.
So you mentioned, you know, as a child. Okay, so what do you think about, you know, there's so many children that have imaginary friends.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
I absolutely think that they are spirits or entities.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk about it. We've talked about it a lot on the show back, I think, later in the year, earlier in the year, excuse me. About how a lot of parents are so dismissive mm-hmm. of their children. If they come and say, you know, I heard a noise or, mm-hmm. or you know, June visits me or whatever the case may be. But it's also because I have young daughters. I have twin girls who are five, and they come to me and they tell me these things. And so on the one hand, I'd like to encourage them to have those experiences, but on the other hand, they're also scared from it. And so I'm eating my own dog food now, saying that I dismiss it as it was probably the wind or a truck was driving by or something like that, or I scooted my chair and that's what you heard, when I really didn't scoot my chair.
Yeah,
because I'm trying to comfort them and mm-hmm. not make them be scared.
Well,
in their own house.
And Andrea Perrin talked about that in her book. She talks about that, you know, that when they first got their haunting that happened to them, she specifically said, we were frightened simply because it existed at yeah. first, right? That they were just scared simply because it existed. And it wasn't till later on when they were able to find out what was good, what was bad, and things like that, and find the positive in all of that that happened. And that's the key too, is to try to figure out a way to turn their fear into a positive,
yeah.
you know, and to pull it back to the imaginary friends. There's a lot of people that think, and I think this too, because I have a spirit guide, and a lot of people have spirit guides in the New Age world and stuff like that. And I'm almost certain my spirit guide is my imaginary friend from when I was a kid, you mm-hmm. know, and I'm wondering if those are those same entities. And maybe as we get older, they become that spirit guide or that higher being, right? That helps you, or like a guardian angel, so to speak, right?
Right. I had three. Friends, and they were always together. I had three friends, and I, you know, I don't know that when you were talking about children, that mm-hmm. kind of triggered that. I just wondered what you thought about that, because I believe that too. I believe that they definitely can be, you know, spirits that are there to comfort you and protect you as a child and help you not be afraid, because they helped me not be afraid, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I came from an abusive home and things like that, and you know, I that was my safety spot, you know, was to be with that friend, you mm-hmm. know, wherever I was at. But yeah, I tell you what, if I wish I had like a ton of money and a psychology degree or something like that, I'd love to do some testing and looking into that more, you know, like to talk to kids that have these imaginary friends and you know, just find some sort of correlation to spirits and things like that. It'd be really interesting, because my sister, her son Connor, had an imaginary friend named Bobbo. And our grandfather died when I was five, and his name was Bob, Grandpa Bob.
Wow.
And, he was a ragtime piano player. It was this whole thing. And he'd say, Mommy, Mommy, Bobbo's here. He play piano, you know, like
wow.
stuff like that. Yeah.
Wow.
And so Trisha, being able to speak to the dead, like she would like tune into it. And she said she would talk to Grandpa Bob, and she was almost certain it was him. Like, and it's just crazy. Hmm. He would just say these things that I mean, and we didn't even know that much about Grandpa Bob. You know what I mean? It's like, because he died when I was five. So it's like to hear him talk about these things. I mean, we were just blown away like by it. And that, you know, his imaginary friend was more than likely Grandpa Bob.
Right. Right. No, I believe that. And, you know, their little minds are so much more open to to things, you know, because the older we get, the more we're told, well, that can't be, you know. But when we're little, you know, our minds are open and our hearts are open to, you know, to have those experiences. So I just wondered about, I just wondered what you thought about imaginary friends. So we're on the same
page. Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just telling a kid, it's just your imagination, you know, it's, and that's where I try not to do that for my girls. I don't try to say it's just your imagination. I do try to maybe help them consider or think about what it could also be. And that's a little bit of the skeptic side of me as well. But yeah, I don't ever want to just dismiss it as just saying, you just have a wild imagination, because that's
Well, that's what I tell my nephew, and then my ex-girlfriend, she had a daughter that was my bonus kid. And when I lived there, I remember telling her, be like, because I've watched too many horror movies. Every time the kid sees something, the parents are like, you're just making it up. Or the wife or the husband sees it and the other spouse is like, you're just making it up. Yeah. And then hell breaks loose. I told Shelby, I was like, listen, if anything ever happens, you tell me, we will get the hell out of this house.
Good idea.
I was like, I will believe you. And I told my wife that too. I was like, if anything ever happens, I will believe you, and we will get a hold of whatever you need. So I've had too many experiences, good or bad. And I'm like, no, if you're scared, let's go. I trust it.
Well, and it's true too. Cause like, so, you know, Stefan, your wife, like mine, is very much a skeptic, I think, on some of this kind of stuff. And so for them to come and admit that they're scared, it's serious, right?
Yeah, right. You know, it definitely requires some investigation regardless, whether it's a real fear of something that's actually there or just a fear of something in their head, right? Because they watch a scary movie. Either way, it needs to be dealt with, and we need to just stop making up things, or you know, we hear that in so many listener stories, right? All the time.
Just trying to get attention.
You're making things up. I mean, like that little girl, well, she wasn't little when she wrote us a listener story, where she told her mom, I smell fire. I smell this. I smell that, you know, I just feel like the house is going to burn. You're just making things up. And then she comes home and that house is burnt. You know, like I don't know. I just wish people would take people more seriously, and you know, and it's not a crazy thing. You know, I'm nuts, but not in a crazy way, in an ADHD kind of way. But my experiences are real. They, you know, do I know 100% what it was? No. Will I keep looking until I die? Yeah, because I want to know. I want to know what those experiences are, because I know that they're not mental. Especially when they're shared experiences, like some of the ones you and I have had together, Josh. Like, those are shared experiences. The things my sister and I have shared together, like, these are important to me, and they make up my story. And I don't ever want to deny anyone that. And that's why I'm so glad we do listener stories, to let people know we believe them and we want to share their stories.
Yep.
That's important.
All right, so I think we've probably come to the part of the show where, Mary, if there's anything that you would like our listeners to know about you, anything you'd like to plug, how can they get in touch with you? How can they find you? How can they follow you?
And Jim's book.
Oh, Jim's book, yes. Well, you know, I'm on Facebook, and I have a Twitter. I'm just so not high tech. I'm just awful, and I need somebody to come teach me. I'm out there on Facebook, and you can reach out to me there. Jim has a wonderful, fabulous, just awesome book coming out. It's an autobiography, full of, you know, nearly 50 years of Hollywood stories and tons of fun photos. And it's called What and Give Up Show Business. and it's coming out. It'll be available for order in the fall. TCU, Texas Christian University Press, is publishing it, and so we're real excited about that. We're getting his website put together now so that you can go there and pre-order the book and look at some of the other things that Jim's got on the website. I was hopeful, and I had actually, you know, Jim did a lot of celebrity autograph shows, you know, the cons and things mm-hmm. like that, and I had planned to go myself. Jim has got Parkinson's, and so mm-hmm. it's difficult for him to travel a lot, and yeah. so we have not gone to any cons in several years, but I was hoping and had actually set up to go to two this summer to get the book out there and be available for people to ask questions about the book. And, you know, of course, those have been canceled,
yeah,
but hopefully,
yeah,
next year, you know, I know people are terribly disappointed about a lot of those cons that have been canceled and investigations yeah. that have been canceled and yep. things like that. But he's just, you know, he's happy, sweet Jimmy, and he's just full of fun and always makes me laugh and has so many good stories. And, you know, it's interesting because different generations of people yes. remember him from different shows, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's my father-in-law was super pumped because of F-Troop. So
oh, F-Troop, yeah, yeah. And he did, of course, Sling Blade, and
yep.
and a big UFO movie, Hangar 18, which has super cult following, you know.
Got
and
that miniseries World War III.
Yes, and he did a Ron Howard direct. Now, of course, he knew the Rance and those Howard boys. Since yeah. they were babies, but he did mm-hmm. Ron Howard directed something called Tut and Tuttle, Under the Glass Pyramid or something like that he did. It was kind of a sci-fi show as well. But, you know, he's done so much. And you know, I had the scariest thing imaginable to me, scariest thing is a werewolf. And who am I married to? And we're in LA, and so Jim has introduced me to one of his good friends who I love and adore. And so I had him over for dinner and had Jim over for dinner one evening and everything. And I was standing in the kitchen looking at the two of them sitting at the table, and I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I've got two werewolves. See, it was David Naughton, who was the American Werewolf in London. And I yes. thought, I've got two werewolves in my house. And that is like the scariest
so
thing imaginable
funny.
To me. But yeah, he's got such great stories. The book is full of good stories. And I got a story real quick for, is it your dad that's the F-Troop fan?
Well, both my dad and my father-in-law are. So.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. Jim said that the show had been on for those of you who don't know, he played the bugler, Hannibal Dobbs, the mm-hmm. blonde bugler. And
great show.
So funny. And just so, I mean, it really had a lot of stuff going on there that you had to double entendres that you catch now. It caught on. Yeah. It had another life again in the 70s with college kids. But he said that the show had been on for a couple of weeks, and he was sitting at the dinner table, and the phone rang, and it was a woman who said she was from the Musicians Union, and that he was playing a musical instrument, and he had to join the union. And of course, Jim went to North Texas State, which was North Texas State, which is a big college for musicians. He thought, it's one of my buddies pulling my leg. And he said, oh yeah, right, you know. And she said, oh no, she said, you are playing a musical instrument, and you are putting a musician out of work, and you must join the union. And he says,
wow.
Lady, you watch next Thursday night, and if what I'm playing is music, I'll join the union. He said he never heard from her again.
Because
he played a bad bugle. He played a bad bugle. But anyway, yeah, thank you so much. This was so much fun. I enjoyed it so
yes.
much. Thank you, thank you, thank
and
you.
And we will absolutely be putting out everything we can about that book when it comes out. You let
yep.
us know, and we will share it all.
Yeah,
people are going to enjoy it, enjoy it, enjoy it. It is just everybody
yeah.
that has read it, the editors, the, you know, everybody that has read it has just said, I laughed out loud so many times.
So.
As an actor myself, I'm always interested in autobiographies, and so I'm very interested in that myself. One of my favorite autobiographies of all time was To Kiss a Stranger by Gene Wilder. But yeah, thank you so much, and we'd love to have you back on, especially when the book comes out. We could have you guest on a topic that we're talking about and then push the book. It would be great. We'd love to have
anytime,
you.
Anytime. My pleasure. Josh, my pleasure.
Josh, I got a little tidbit for you just to throw in a little bit more Star Trek, is that Jim worked, studied with Leonard Nimoy, acting in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah, he did.
Just to add a little Star Trekiness for you there.
I'm actually wearing my Star Trek shirt today. So.
Yeah, so we're both big Trekkies, but I just saw that and
did.
I was like,
He did study with Leonard Nimoy.
We're going to dive real quick into our listener story. So this one comes from a listener named Bruce Souther, and this is read by an actor friend of ours named Tom Frisbee, who runs Improv Anonymous here in Louisville. And his Bruce's story is this. He says,
"My name is Bruce Souther from Kentucky. Back in the late 80s, I worked at Shakertown in Mercer County. Part of my job was to empty trash from the buildings, including any office buildings. I was in the ministry's workshop building, which was used solely as an office building for employees of Shakertown. One Saturday morning, I was in the ministry's workshop building emptying the waste baskets. I was on the first floor, and I heard footsteps above me on the second floor that sounded like dress shoes, as they were loud. I thought nothing of it and assumed it was one of the staff that was working. I walked up the stairs to see who was there, stopped, and still heard more footsteps even though the room was completely empty. I started walking toward the center of the room, and the footsteps stopped. I looked everywhere, no one was there. I got cold chills and freaked out and got the trash and left. I had a very eerie feeling every time I went in the building from then on. There was also a room where a guest could stay where a young girl had killed herself. The story I was told is that she became pregnant, and obviously that would have been devastating for her and the Shaker community. She wrote a suicide note on the wall, which is still there and preserved by glass. She tied bed sheets together and hanged herself. I was in that room many times, and while I never saw anything, every time I was there, I felt a heavy presence as if I was being watched. Guests would leave in the middle of the night sometimes after staying there and a few other rooms."
Wow. So yeah, Shakertown, which is actually the next town over, it's in Harrodsburg from Santosh, actually, and I've been meaning to go. It's not far from here in Kentucky. So
I went as with a field trip when I was in middle school, and it's a really neat little place to visit sometimes. But yeah, I mean it definitely has really like a colonial feel feel to it.
Yeah, there was a village in Ohio where I grew up in Toledo. It was like 30 minutes south or west or something like that we would go. And it was a very similar old village like that. And they would,
I would like to applaud him, by the way, because he got creeped out, but yet he still grabbed the trash. He still
He
still did his job.
Yeah.
Yes. Good for him. Good for him. But thank you, Bruce, for sending in that story. And thank you, Tom, for portraying Bruce for us. We really appreciate it. And on that, Josh, let's get our plugs out of the way and get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. You can find us at fearscapepodcast.com. There you can get on to all of our stuff, our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and even Fearscape Media on YouTube, where you can watch Fearscape Unhinged, our video show, I guess.
Yeah.
Of weird different stuff where we talk about topics. But also send in your listener stories to fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. You can always send those to us. We'll read them on air, get an actor to read them. Whatever. Find us, send us messages on Facebook, whatever. We want those stories.
Yep.
And Josh, what else can they find while they're on our website?
Yeah, so if you're out there on the website, you can click on the store and take a look at all of our great t-shirt designs that we've got out there. Stefan has been hard at work in the idea shop lately, tinkering away, coming up with great t-shirt ideas, and so there's some really spectacular ones out there. And we've got a really good one coming that I think everybody's going to be pleased with. And then also you could jump out and take a look at our Patreon, and if you want to, look at seeing how you can support us monthly, we love bringing you this great show and the great content. And if you want to help us out, that'd be great.
Yeah. And so on that, thank you guys so much for tuning in. And Mary, for the 15th time, thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys are great.
I love a good positive energy. It'll feed me for the rest of the night. So
I'm good. Feed me Seymour.
Yes, exactly. A little shop action. But we're going to get out of here. Josh, thank you for being my co-host. I love you, brother. And this has been Stefan, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And remember, folks, hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky when you listen to Fearscape. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.